You know, for as long as I can remember, people have been asking me what I want to be when I get older. I guess technically I'm older now, but what's the next step? If you're entering that transition phase in your life, graduating college, going to grad school, or even just moving to a new city, we've got something for you.
All right, welcome to the brand new show, Transitions. I'm John Mim, and this is my co-host, Callie McCurdy. Together, we'll guide you from show to show and introduce you to Philadelphia's most inspiring entrepreneurs, musicians, comedians, and more.
There's nothing better than experience itself, and we'll be featuring guests on Transitions that are, to be honest, walking in shoes not so different from yours. Now that you've got a feel for the show, meet the rest of the folks behind Transitions.
Ladies and germs, welcome to the April 28th edition of Transitions Radio. Let's get a round of applause again. What a day, what a day, what a day. Tornadoes are rocking the South, is it, I believe? Yeah, Alabama got hit.
And
weather's been crazy around here.
It's record-breaking tornadoes. And weather's been crazy here.
Callie and I both had crazy days. My car battery decided to die on me. So he took my brother's car up here, which is a manual car, which has been ages since I drove a manual car. So when I pulled into the parking lot, there was smoke coming out from the front. So
I've got two pieces of advice
that
will help people to avoid a day like mine. Number one, if you're paying student loans online, make sure that you don't pay them twice in 1 month. Number two, don't wear a dress in the city on a windy day. And, you know, number three, make sure you get on the right train home.
All wonderful pieces of advice.
But tonight, speaking of dresses and somebody who probably knows not to wear a dress on a windy day, Maria McDevitt is here, the designer of Coffee Stains. She's back with us tonight to discuss her spring line.
Looking forward to that. We also have a great segment, which Janine is going to let us know about what the wonderful spring things going on in Philadelphia are going to be as well. So we can look forward to that. A big thing this weekend, the PIFA, Philadelphia International
Festival of the Arts.
Festival of the Arts. We'll be holding a big festival Saturday in the middle of Broad Street.
That's right. And Dan will be talking to us again about the NFL lockout and, of course, the Flyers. Flyers game versus the Sabres. Didn't they play, they played what, 2 nights ago? I don't watch, to be honest, but sometimes I get roped into it.
They played on Tuesday, and they
won. Played
on
Tuesday, and they won. That's right. I think all hockey players look the same with the long hair.
Yeah, and they're all Canadian.
It's just a theory. And then we'll find out what's on tap this weekend. So be sure to check us out at www.transitionsradio.com.
Facebook.com/transitionsradio.
And, of course, on the Twitter at transitionsr.
Of course, every Friday from 4 to 5 p.m., check us out on WYBF 89.1 FM, The Burn.
And to mention one last time, we are featured in Cabrini College's magazine, so check it out at www.cabrini.edu.
Let's start off with our guns blazing, as Derek says, to our main interview with fashion designer, the one and only Maria McDevitt. Let's get a round of applause.
Welcome back, Maria.
Thank you for having me back. It's exciting to come back.
You're welcome. You are in such a different place now than when you were when we first had you on. When do we have her on? What time of year? What was it? November?
Yeah.
It was before. Yeah.
Last summer. Yeah. It was a long time ago. Yeah, because I remember what dress I was wearing. How funny. So let's see. Last summer, you were just starting out working at White House Black Market, and you had just started putting together your fall line, and you were selling it to a boutique in Cape May. Where have you transitioned to since then?
Well, it was a big transition. I continued to sell to the store in Cape May, to the boutique for the fall, and I ended that in October when I, you know, finalized that sale, and I continued to work pretty much full time at the shop in the mall. And then I met a woman who is a jewelry designer, and she just kind of suggested, hey, why don't we do a show together? And I was like, okay. And I didn't know if we were really going to go anywhere with it. And then right around Christmas, she sent me this long email about how we should just do it. So I spent all winter putting together a spring summer line. And she spent all winter making tons of just beautiful jewelry. And in March, we had a trunk show where we premiered everything. We premiered all of my clothes, all of her jewelry, and it was really successful. And since then, I've been mainly filling orders that I got from the trunk show and still working at the mall part-time just to keep my foot in the door there, but also finalizing orders with stores that I got from the trunk show.
Now, for non-fashion conscientious guys like Derek and myself, what exactly is a trunk show? Explain that.
A trunk show is traditionally what designers will do to kind of do personal selling of their line, which is – it's usually like mine was a small, pretty intimate gathering just to show, you know, what I have, what you can get. And, I mean, with most established companies, they'll have the sizes there that you can try on and take home. But, you know, since I'm starting from the ground up, I had my samples and people could place orders, which worked out fine anyway. It was great. But, yeah, it's mostly – it's pretty much just a big presentation, putting all your cards on the table.
And how did it all come together? What were the steps that went into planning it, and how did you show off your clothing?
It was – the way it came together, I didn't even realize until I was in the middle of doing it how much event planning had to go into it. When we decided that we were both going to do this trunk show, I thought, okay, so I have to make roughly 9 or 10 outfits. That's, you know, that's doable. I can do that. And then, you know, talking, getting advice from other people, I had to market myself. I had professional invitations made with a photo of one of my products on it. I had to, my one advisor said, stomp pavement. So I had to, you know, take a day where I just went to the city, walked around the city all day, handing out invitations personally. I had to follow up with those people, you know, remind them a week before the show just to come. And just getting everything together, getting the venue, and then the presentation of the show itself when it came to the food, the catering, the models, it was a lot, but it really fell together great that day, and I was really happy with the outcome.
I was actually at this event, but I wanted to ask you all about it because, you know, we don't always communicate on what exactly we're doing. But you held it on Boathouse Row and actually had people modeling your clothes. So Maria essentially hired a bunch of people. Everyone was afraid to sit in their dresses because they thought that if they got food on them or if they ate in them or wrinkled them, that Maria would be angry. So it was pretty funny. But it was cool because she tied it together with headbands. Mm-hmm. You had a headband for each dress that matched the fabric, and then tons of food and the jewelry sale. So it was a really pretty event. What would you say was the hardest part of it?
I think the hardest part of it was getting the event planning itself. Since I had no experience in that, I had no experience in marketing my line and everything behind that. I mean, I knew how to make clothes. And getting everything together, getting all of my, you know, eggs in one basket, everything lined up so that the day would go smoothly. I mean, I couldn't have done it without all the support I had. You know, I had my mom, whose friend was a chef, so he did all the catering. I had a friend who used to own a business who put these beautiful stands together for my models to stand on. She got all the sound equipment so I could put on a fashion show every hour. And I think just really getting everything finalized like that was the hardest part, you know, just getting all the I's dotted and the T's crossed.
Well, then, so obviously a lot of networking went into this. You networked with a woman that you met who did jewelry, and then you networked with people that your mother knew, and then you actually networked with one of our guests that we had on the show, Dani Marie. So tell us about that.
That was a great connection. What she does is she's an event planner and also, as you guys know, a musician, and she does all the event and specializing at the Triumph Brewery in Old City, and she invited me to be in her monthly trunk show, which was awesome. I went in April, and I was the only fashion designer there. But there were various jewelry designers, there were artists, there were photographers, and it was really an awesome event. And she does it the last Sunday of every month. And the next one she'll be doing, which I'll be attending also, I believe it's either May 28th or 29th, but it's that weekend in May. And it's a really great event. It's from 1 to 5. And, you know, the place has great food and great drinks. And it's really cool, too, just to go and see all these awesome designers and artists that are there.
Now, Derek doesn't know this, but I've been collecting small snippets of his hair and collecting it for a while. It's cool. It's cool. Can I bring these to the trunk show?
You know, it's all in presentation. So if you think of something creative,
a way
to drive your product, I'm sure you can.
Can we do a fall line? You know, you could do some bracelets, and I'll do some more snippets of Derek's hair when he's not looking.
I'll have my people contact your
good.
People.
Good deal.
Derek's hair is now hopefully the object of John's
obsession.
Yeah, because mine has been it for too long. All right. Well, let's take a few steps back, because obviously you're doing great with your line. Everything is sort of falling into place for you, if you will. And I know that you recently you hired somebody to start helping you with sewing. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to take a step back to talk about when you were working at the store in the mall and sort of the hardships that you endured, you know, working there and also interviewing for design jobs and what that process is like.
Yeah, I mean, interviewing for interviews in general, they're tough. They're tough to prepare for. But for design jobs, it's sometimes even more difficult, because what they do is they ask you to do projects. And as much as, you know, we love illustrating and we love designing, there's a lot of work that goes behind it, a lot of hours. So, you know, I would be getting up, working at the mall, you know, 6 to 8 hours a day, and then getting this project together that basically had to be an entire resort collection. I had to, you know, present all of my ideas behind the collection, illustrate the collection itself, and show the technical drawings and how the garments would be made, as well as have a presentation behind it, why I did what I did, why I chose these colors, you know, who my demographic is, who the target market is, price points. You're pitching a sales plan, basically, at your interview. And it's great, Noam, because you put yourself out there. But at the same time, that's probably one of the most challenging things to do, to really just bear everything that you've done, however many hours for the past few weeks, to some people that you don't really know.
So essentially then, for interviewing for these positions, you have to design pretty much an entire new line in your head.
Yes.
And put it down on paper.
Mm-hmm.
But not actually make the garments. Or did you actually put together many?
I didn't for this, my most recent interview, which was in November. My interview that I had last May for a different company asked for a mock-up, which is like a sample of a hand technique or a sample of one of your ideas. So sometimes they do. Sometimes they even ask for that, which kind of like throws even more work on your plate.
What is it like, though, to put your design – and I won't mention the company, but you had said that after you interviewed with the company and they had your project that you felt like you saw your designs in their store.
I did. I walked by a few months later and I glanced in the window and, I was like, that looks really familiar. And I was to the point where I couldn't even believe it, and I thought, that can't be. And I went and I re-looked at my project, and there were various similarities that were just a little too similar. And then I thought back, and they did hold my project for a few months. And
you were trying to get it back.
I tried to get it back for about a month and a half. I emailed and called people constantly, and they said they were out of office, which could very well be true, too. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But at the same time, that's what happens. I learned the hard way you really can't trust anyone. And I've heard similar stories, too, from people older than me who have more experience and have even had their own companies and their own ideas taken like that.
I had an interesting conversation when I was at your trunk show with a woman, I think.
Charlotte Andrews.
Charlotte, yeah. Yes. And I was talking with her for a while, and she said that the method of most of the of these big designer companies, any big name that you think of, they hire a designer and squeeze them dry and let them go. Is there truth behind that?
In some companies, it is true, especially the, you know, bigger corporations, that they don't really look at it. And I mean, any business, you're not going to look at something just as, I'm doing this for the sake of art. There's money behind it. But in some companies where it's more mass produced than others, and you know, they're the stores that have different clothes in every 5 weeks, those are the companies where they do hire the young people fresh out of school with lots of ideas, and they use it, and let them go which unfortunately happens a lot, especially when someone's hired freelance, because then, you know, you have about a month there, 2 months there, and they take what they can get from you, and you're not an employee, so you're not signed on then to work for them in the future.
Maria, what are we going to plan to do for guys in the future?
Other than hair bands.
Other than hair bands.
I haven't thought about doing menswear yet. It's pretty tricky. But I have someone who keeps bugging me for a seersucker suit. So I might be dabbling with menswear in the very near future.
Just watch the language. How children here.
How is it more difficult? how is menswear more difficult? Isn't it simpler? I mean, it's
actually the fit in menswear. The great thing about women's wear is that women have curves, so lots of things drape. You make things that hug, and it's very simple to do. But with menswear, everything has to be tailored. You know, the measurements are very different, and it is. It's, for some reason, it's much more difficult. Especially, I think it's all the tailoring that's involved.
And you could have like a really tall guy with short arms,
right?
Long.
Exactly.
You work with really weird people, because I wear T-shirts and they all fit wonderfully.
T-shirts are a different story.
That's what you need to get into. That's the business.
The T-shirt printing business.
Exactly.
That's your advice. Well, now, so tell us about, you did bring on an employee to start helping you.
Yes, I actually have two. I have two women sewing for me. One woman lives in my hometown, and so I go to her once a week and give her some clothes to put together, and she's great. She's very Italian. She gives me espresso sometimes on my way out. So that's really a great relationship that we have. And I have another woman in a shop in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, who's doing some work for me. And also in the fall, she wants to sell my clothes in her store. So that was a great connection, because not only is she helping me out, but she's also then going to be carrying my product.
So now you have summer coming up, and you'll be selling to Cape May again, the boutique down there.
Yes.
What is like your – where do you see yourself, you know, 2 years from now, if you could – I mean, maybe realistically, and where would you want to be?
I mean, it's so hard to think 2 years down the road, because when I was last on the show in August, I would never have imagined being right here right now, which is amazing. But I hope to just keep moving forward. I know, you know, I'm going to have another trunk show in the fall. I'm going to put together a winter collection and debut that, and I'm hoping to just keep moving forward, keep putting my stuff in different stores, getting my name out there, and hopefully just growing. And, you know, hopefully in 2 years from now, I will have my own store where I'm interviewing people, and but not taking their projects, sucking their ideas.
I think the final thing I want to ask you is, I'm sure we asked you this last time, what your piece of advice would be to young designers out there. And now that you've certainly taken your own transition in life and maybe learned some new lessons this year, now what would your advice be?
I would say my advice is that you really can't be afraid. If you have an idea, I think what I've lived by the most in the past few months, if you're going to say you're going to do something, then do it. You know, I said I was going to do a trunk show, and then I really just did it. And it yielded a lot of success. So if you think about doing something and you want to do it, don't just say it, do it.
Right. Wise words from a wise lady.
And one last time, Maria, where can everybody find your stuff, and what is the weekend that you'll be having the second show?
My second show is the last weekend in May. That's Sunday at the Triumph Brewery Company in Old City on Chestnut Street. And my product you will be able to find in Misdemeanor in Cape May, New Jersey, as well as Kate Smith Boutique in Lebanon. And also, everything is on my website at www.coffeestains.weebly.com. And anyone who has any questions about orders, personal orders, anything, can, my contact information is on the website.
Okay, great. Thanks for coming on, Maria.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you.
Tonight's episode of Transitions is brought to you by the letters P, I, F, and A. To find out what PFAS stands for, we have our very own Janine Gibbons. Janine, take it away.
Thank you, John Mim, for that excellent intro. I was a big Sesame Street fan when I was little. Go Elmo. So tonight on And Lights Up, I will be giving you a preview and an exclusive look into PIFA. And what does that stand for? Well, I'm going to answer your question right now. It's the Philadelphia International Festival of the Arts. So it's going to be really cool this year. And I'm actually talking about it in its final weekend. So there's like a pressure to go to this because I just kind of found out the whole scope of what this festival includes. And our guest tonight, Maria, was even saying there's going to be a Ferris wheel on Broad Street. It's a big deal. So before that, though, I want to get off talking about the inspiration behind the festival this year. It's really basically based it's based on Paris from the years 1910 to 1920 and all of the creative expression that was going on at that time. So the two main things I'm going to be talking about tonight are the Plaza in the Kimmel Center. We'll be having a 82-foot lighting structure of the Eiffel Tower. And let me get this right.
The Eiffel Tower?
The Eiffel Tower.
It's a mini Eiffel. It's a Eiffel Tower.
It's a Eiffel Tower, I see.
A Eiffel Tower.
It's a PIFA Eiffel.
Yes. So, and there's an event to go along with, you know, looking at this beautiful structure. On Friday, tomorrow, April 29th, from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m., there's going to be a party, the last night in Paris.
John Mim's house.
I'm going
I
there.
Heard it. It's your own house. We'll all be there.
Right?
Yeah.
I live right up the street.
Surprise.
For everyone.
But no, it will be at the Kimmel Center, unless that is your house, which would be cool.
I don't know. I do have a deck. A deck on top of the house so we can all hang out.
A roof deck, John. Right. That's what that's called.
Well, we can see the top of the Eiffel Tower from
Beautiful.
There, maybe. But there's dancing, there's special cocktails, and celebrity DJs. So I really actually kind of want to go.
Pauly D.
I don't know, but you know, if it was, I'm sure all
ceiling.
My friends would be going. So, and tickets are affordable. So,
how much?
Yeah.
I can't say,
but definitely check out my blog if you ever want more info on that. So, yeah, and along with everything going on that's Paris with that event, there's going to be French wine tasting, French food, and French lessons, which I actually took French in college, so I'd be curious to see how much I actually remember.
Hopefully not French kissing lessons. That's not right.
No, I mean, I'm sure, you know, with special cocktails and all the magic of Paris. You never know. You know, I would say go and find out.
The flower show was based
Express about, yourself.
The flower show was based on Paris this year, too.
It was, it's, yeah.
Is this a whole...
We.
Yeah, it's we.
We.
I'm getting in the Paris mood.
Derek's totally yeah. French now.
D-Tech yeah. is French.
Well, Janine Ooh, la, is actually la. A French name, so I take some pride in that. I didn't used to,
Janine.
But now I do.
What? Janine.
So...
What does parlez-vous mean? Just to get that off.
Parlez-vous.
Parlez-vous
français.
Yeah. Do you speak French?
I didn't even remember that. Yeah, parlez-vous français. So so that's one event that's going on, but that's just, you know, the icing on the
tip of the Eiffel.
The tip of the
Eiffel.
The Eiffel. Icing.
The tip of the Eiffel.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There it is.
So moving on into our second event of this great festival is Circus Arts.
What?
Now, this is something I don't ever really talk about on Transitions. And I have to admit, as a child, I was really afraid of the circus because I'm like a vegetarian and very like, I love animals. And I went to the circus once in eighth grade with my friend Katie, who's actually here tonight. And like there was like animal protesters. So I never really liked that whole angle of the circus. This is not that. Let me just clear this.
I'm pretty sure that animals not getting eaten in the wild would rather be in cages.
Well,
but that's for another time.
True. You have a point there, but
there's so many things wrong with that statement, Derek.
You have a point. Yeah, there are two sides to every story. But this event will be hosted by the Philadelphia School of Circus Arts, and I, you know, checked out their page on the website, which I'll give you at the end, and it's amazing. One show that they're working on is called The Green Fairy Cabaret. Now, if you don't know where the inspiration behind that comes from, it's based around, and I'm probably going to say this wrong, absinthe.
Absinthe?
Absinthe.
Absinthe.
Absinthe. Please edit that.
Which is awful, an awful, awful well, thing.
Well, it's a kind of alcohol that's, if you don't know, that's illegal in this country. My friend had it in Spain, he said.
I thought they made it legal at some point.
Did they? They might have.
I heard some stories.
It wasn't
still
here.
Not.
No,
regardless, it's awful. It's an awful thing.
It's absinthe without all the benefits.
I see.
Oh, well... This show definitely has all the benefits, as you put it, or hallucinogens like
absinthe-like
that go along with the alcohol. And one frequent thing that people often hallucinate when imbibing this wonderful drink is a green fairy. And if you've ever seen Moulin Rouge, you know, because it's at the beginning. I'm a little green fairy.
It's also on Road Trip. I mean Euro Trip.
Oh, all right. Trip. Well, that's probably
I think there's
even
a green. Green fairy that shows up.
Yeah. So, and what the show will be dealing with and how they'll incorporate that is looking at the different sides of that, of hallucinating, including addiction and creative inspiration. And the coolest thing I saw was they show you like all this trapeze work and this one girl who had actually been, had gone through an addiction to drugs, wrapped herself in fabric. And she was explaining like the metaphor behind it is like, you know, sometimes you get tangled in your addictions and then she like untangled herself in like a second. It
That's
was amazing.
Cool.
So definitely check it out. The website is PIFA, www.pifa.org. That's PIFA.org. PIFA.
Like PITA with an F.
I was calling it PIFA at first and I got corrected.
Oh, okay.
It's the pie,
whatever
pie
you want, I guess. Yeah.
But the last thing I wanted to say about that was just this quote that I thought was really, really good that I got from watching one of the videos. And this is from the managing director of the Philadelphia School of Circus Arts, Robin Marcotte. And he said, "When I create work, I want to see stuff that will change the audience's breathing. Physical theater, I often say, is something that touches the heart and mind because it's something you feel before you actually think about it." And I love that because it's so true. Like, I don't know. So it's just great. I mean, take that for what you will. And also there's an event going along with this show. I don't think you can actually see the Green Fairy Cabaret during this weekend, but they have a lot of stuff on the website about it. But the event is actually going on a trapeze. If you want to learn how to do that, you can pay. I would love to.
No.
Somebody, it's 55. Oh, it's find out on the website. But the event will be going on this weekend four times a day at 9 a.m., 11:30 a.m., 4:30 p.m., and 7 p.m. And it will be at the actual school itself, I'm guessing outside because it's an outdoor event, at the Fly School Circus on South Broad Street, 319, Philadelphia, PA. So definitely, if you want to do that, check it out. They said they'll be teaching you everything from, like, you know, actually grabbing the trapeze and going across to somebody catching you.
And breaking your neck.
I'm sure there's net. Hopefully.
One would hope.
Just pavement.
Yeah.
Good
so,
luck.
Don't worry if you fall that street. Well, done didn't break your fall.
Yes. And so it's full scale flying trapeze. Let's see. And Jules, let's see if I can say this right. Jules Leotard, that is his name,
nice.
Will be teaching these lessons. So it's definitely pretty cool.
Leotard.
Yes. So that's a little look into what is going on at the Philadelphia International Festival of the Arts. There's so much more, though. I really only did scratch the surface. I tried to
scratch the surface.
Freudian slip.
But I'm bummed the surface. But yeah, there's a lot of theater going on, too. But I figured since I usually cover theater, I'd do something different. And I have to say, I really want to try out the trapeze thing. So, and if anyone's down for Last Night in Paris at John Min's
rooftop deck.
Right
I'll
above the Prohibition Tap Room.
Yeah, I'm showing up tomorrow at 10 p.m.
John will also
late.
Be hosting trapeze lessons.
Yes, I will.
But
my
there
own.
Is no net.
We'll be swinging from, sheets on a banister?
What I really want to do is I want to put a big S on my car and drive it down Broad Street. So when it goes by, people will say, look at that escargot.
Oh, wow. Cheesy.
I love corny jokes. That's a good one.
I got that from somewhere, some movie or
something. It's good, though. No,
I got
it's
that from
good.
Second grade.
And so if you want to know anything about this festival one more time, it's www.pifa.org. And yeah, that's going to do it for me. I'm Janine Gibbons, your arts and entertainment contributor for Transitions Kill the Lights. So other than PIFA, here is what's going on this weekend. In theater, previous Transitions guest Jack Jonas will be in the musical Rent that is going on at the Barn Playhouse on Christopher Land and Rittenhouse Boulevard in Jefferson, PA. It begins its run on May 6th at 8 p.m. and ends on May 21st. For a full schedule of all showtimes or for ticket information, please visit www.barnplayhouse.org. And if you're looking for some great comedy down the shore this weekend, full-time writer and frequent commentator on E's Chelsea Lately, Heather McDonald will be at the Harrah's in Atlantic City, New Jersey on Friday, April 29th at 8:30 p.m. She does really great celebrity impressions, I know, because I watched Chelsea Lately, like, it is my full-time job, especially of Drew Barrymore and Sarah Palin. Those are my two favorites. Also performing with her will be Chris Frangiola, also a frequent commentator on Chelsea Lately, and Joseph Anthony. If you'd like more information about Heather's stand-up show, please call 1-800. Please visit www.ticketmaster.com or www.myspace.com/Heather McDonald. Sorry. Can I just do that last sentence again? If you would like more information about Heather's stand-up show, please visit www.ticketmaster.com or www.myspace.com/Heather McDonald Comedy. And finally, if you just want to rock out this weekend, then you're in luck. The alternative metal band Saliva will be performing at the Crocodile Rock in Allentown, PA this Saturday, April 30th at 7 p.m. If you'd like more information about this show, please visit www.saliva.com. And finally, my personal movie pick for the week is Water for Elephants. I will be seeing this film with Daniel Alio. It features this, I talk about him sometimes, Rob Patterson. Pattinson. I don't know why I was going to call him Patterson.
Edward.
But I'm really excited to see him in this film because he's going to have some healthy glow to him. And I love Reese Witherspoon, who's also in the film. So
glow that's not coming from diamonds?
Exactly. He will not be glittering in the sun. He just isn't so pale. So that's what's on tap this weekend. Back to you, John and Callie.
Thanks, Janine. That sounds pretty cool.
That was a great segment.
That's interesting. I would love to. I actually did see something on the news about the trapezing in the city, which I thought was cool.
The Ferris wheels and the parties.
Ferris wheel on Broad Street.
Awesome.
As Maria said earlier, she's trying to get on that. Yeah. I'm trying to get on that too. let's go to Dan now for the second love of the city this week, or the first in most minds, I guess. Sports. Talking about the Flyers-Sabres game. And talking about NFL lockdown.
It's not lockdown. It's lockout.
Derek, I am sorry, okay? I'm sorry that I messed up your words.
There we go. Right? It's not my words. There we go.
The lockout.
Before we get to that, be sure to check us out online at transitionsradio.com.
You can find us on Facebook, Transitions Radio, the Twitter at Transitions R.
And as always, every Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. on 89.1 WYBF FM, The Burn in Radnor, Pennsylvania.
Dan, take it away.
All right, welcome back to another edition of the Three-Pointer. Dan Schmidt joined, as always, by the coach, Dave Bennett.
How we doing?
And this week, we're going to take a step inside the three-point line. This is only going to be a two-pointer this week because we have two very important topics that we need to get to, and I think it would be doing an injustice if we didn't both give them the credible amount of time they needed. Number one being, this week, the NFL lockout was lifted by Judge Susan Nelson. Now, what this means, I mean, unless you're a lawyer, you really don't know what all this means. The legal jargon is just so much that I can't even make hide nor hair of it. But apparently, the lockout is lifted. Players are returning to work. Some are, at least. Yeah, we'll get onto that. First things first, let's discuss the Flyers' Game 7 playoff victory in the first round over the Buffalo Sabres. Now, Coach, this is one of the strangest playoff series that I've ever seen in the entire 27 years I've been watching hockey.
Yeah, it's been really up and down with the Flyers. They've either had the really potent offense, scoring 4+ goals in the majority of the game, or they've had their complete and utter shutouts, which, you know, was really hurting them down the stretch there, you know, going down 3-1.
Down 3-1 in game six, down 3-0 to start out game five, all in the first period.
Yeah, you can't play come from behind every time. Granted, the Flyers obviously have, so correcting myself obviously is needed, but at the same time, you can't play that kind of catch-up hockey all the time.
It was one of the strangest series that I've ever seen. The Flyers lost two games in which they only gave up one goal, and they won two games where the goalie got pulled in the first period. I have never seen anything like this in all my life of watching hockey, but I'll tell you one thing it showed me about this Flyers team is that you truly can never count them out of any game in any situation. No. Down 3-0 in Game 5, they stormed back to tie it. Down 3-1 in Buffalo, facing elimination, stormed back to tie it. And then eventually win the game in overtime.
Well, it comes back to even last year against the Bruins.
Down 3-0.
Down 3-0 in the series, down 3-0 in the Game 7. I mean, they love the cardiac arrest type of hockey. They need to be pushed to be at their best. But again, I'm going to say you're not going to win a championship playing that kind of hockey. It's just not going to happen.
But the one thing that does reassure me a little bit about the Flyers was that they did save their best effort for last. Yep. Game 7 was, to be honest with you, the most boring game in the entire series. Flyers just dominated whistle to whistle. Buffalo never had a chance in the game.
And those two goals towards the end were it-was-going-to-happen type of goals. I mean, being up 4-0 at the one point, then they put one
in.
That's
just human nature. You're up 4-0 in the third period. You're going to back off a little bit.
You get a
no
little
need
lax,
to throw yourself in front of every puck, because now you're worried about the next round.
And let's be honest, they haven't shut anybody out all year.
They went in that third period, and you were thinking, could this be? Could it be that they would get their first shutout of the season in Game 7 in the playoffs?
In game number 89 of the year?
But no, it was not to be. But still, just a tremendous performance by the Flyers in Game 7. Really just the team that we all expected to show up finally showed up.
The thing that worries me the most is that Chris Pronger, yes, he did come back, played sparingly in Game 6, about 4 or 5 minutes, played a little bit more in Game 7.
Yeah, played about 16 minutes.
Yeah, played well, but you didn't see him shoot once. And I'm not talking wrist shots from the point or flicking it. I'm talking
slap shot.
Not one. And he had multiple opportunities to do it, and to me that says his wrist ain't right.
I actually had a theory about this that I was thinking about today. If you're Chris Pronger, and being Chris Pronger, you're one of the smartest players in the league. I mean, you don't get to the position he's in and stay in the league for that long unless you are one of the smartest players in the league. If I'm Chris Pronger, and I know that the other team knows that I'm not taking a slap shot, what I would do is that first slap shot he takes is going to be such a surprise.
Yeah.
So I would wait. I would save that. Kind of like how Pavel Datsyuk on the Red Wings saved that between the legs move until he was in the playoffs in a big situation. If I'm Chris Pronger, I'm saving that first slap shot for when I've got a point blank chance on a power play when the Flyers are losing, you know, when you really need a goal, when, you know, you're pressing to tie it, you're pressing to take the lead. I would wait and take that first initial hard slap shot when the other team, which will be Boston, we now know, totally not expecting it.
I see where you're coming from, element of surprise and all that's all well and good, but can't be pulling punches in the playoffs. You can't hold back. If he has something and they're only up one or two or whenever, if he has a wide open shot at the net or at least a good look and he's good enough to take it or his wrist is good enough, he's got to take it. He's got to put it through because that's hockey. You got to get your shots in when you can. I don't think.
And the good news is that after playing, you know, Game 6, you know, played 4 minutes, was used sparingly on the power play. Game 7, got back into it, played 16 minutes, you know, still about 10 minutes less than he's used to playing. But that pretty much counts as him participating fully in the game. After Chris Pronger's first full game back in a couple months, he gets 4 days off. That, I think, is a great, great scenario for the Flyers.
I think it's a great scenario all around for that team. They're pretty beat up and banged up after that series.
Dude,
Not as much as the Sabres, though.
Stressful games. Oh, the Sabres had nothing
left.
The Sabres were done.
I mean, we just beat the crap out of them. But again, it went both ways. Our guys were hurting, too. Although, the smallest guy on the ice played the biggest.
Danny Briere.
Wow.
Danny Briere. You know, a lot of people, you know, had a problem with that deal when he signed it. 8 years, $65 million some dollars.
Pretty good
He's
deal.
Worth every penny.
Yeah.
He's worth every penny.
In the beginning, he wasn't. He was hurt a lot, had some issues.
But I'll tell you what, you signed that contract saying, we'd rather have your points in the playoffs than in the regular season, and that's what he does.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's going to pay dividends for the rest of the playoffs. He does lead the league in points after the lockout in the playoffs, so yeah. That's huge.
All right, game one versus Boston. Who are you putting in the goal?
Boucher.
That's what I would go with.
Gotta give it to Goat.
I think Boucher played well enough in Game 7 that he has earned himself a start in the next series against Boston, whom, as we all know, Flyers eliminated after being down 3-0 last year. Should be an incredible series. But now let's move on to more positive, you know, good news. NFL lockout lifted. NFL draft going down tonight. Eagles have the 23rd pick. Who are they taking?
That's a really tough question.
Asking Andy Reid who he's taking in the draft is like asking where's Waldo.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
Yeah, it's a really tough question. They have some definite needs at linebacker, interior line position.
Pretty much every level of the defense.
Cornerback. Safety wouldn't be a problem, but at 23, I don't think they're going to be moving around too much. They may actually move back if they don't see the value.
I definitely see a much greater chance of them moving down as opposed to moving up.
Yeah, I don't see them moving up into the teens or anything like that to grab someone.
But hey, they surprised us last year, moving up to 15 to take Brandon Graham.
Yeah, that was a surprise, and they were pretty much in the exact same spot they were this year, or they are this year.
Well, anyway, two players that, you know, I've been looking at for the Eagles in the draft. ESPN's draft experts, Mel Kiper, Tom McShay, also have been spotting these two players for the Eagles. The first guy I look at is offensive tackle Gabe Kareemi out of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin is just an offensive lineman factory.
Absolutely.
They just churn them out, and they're all good pro players. I mean, most recently, Joe Thomas drafted, I think, in the top 5 out of Wisconsin. He's a pro bowler.
Yeah, he's a great lineman. I mean, they're a run football first team, too.
They are always a pound the ball Big Ten team.
Great lineman upbringings. They have great line coaches. And, you know, like you said, you got guys like that coming out. Gabe Kareemi is pretty much a John Runyon midget, if you want to say, or a little bit smaller than Runyon, but still plays with the anger and tenacity he does. And I think that would bring a heck of a load of help over to the Winston Justice side of the line, the right side. So,
totally agree. I think the two most pressing needs for the Eagles in this draft would be, you know, obviously they need some help on the defensive side of the ball, especially in the secondary. But if there's one position on the offense that needs to be improved, it is that offensive line. Michael Vick took an absolute beating last year behind this offensive line. And I remember at the beginning of the year, a lot of people disagreed with my view that we need to put Michael Vick in as the quarterback, if for nothing else that Kevin Cobb would not survive behind that offensive line last year. The fact that Michael Vick could avoid those hits and escape out of the pocket and make plays was the only reason the Eagles won games last year. Yep. With a standard immobile quarterback back there, he gets killed.
Oh, absolutely. And Kevin Cobb,
he did get killed. Cobb got knocked out in the first half of the first game.
Yeah. Cobb's a good quarterback. I think he's going to have some success in the league. I hope somebody overpays for him. People were talking about first-round picks during the draft and stuff like that.
I'll tell you what I really hope. I really hope that by the time this segment airs, that Kevin Cobb has actually been traded.
Yeah.
And that the Eagles have 2 first-round picks.
I would love it. I don't think it's going to happen. But, it's something that would happen after the draft for next year's picks.
Second player I think the Eagles should really take a look at in this draft has some character issues, but he should be available at number 23, and that is cornerback Jimmy Smith out of Colorado.
Yeah, 6'2", about 215, great size for corner, especially if you can cover.
Especially,
I mean, that's huge.
That's the size corner that the Eagles need, because they've been throwing out, you know, Asante Samuel is a fantastic corner.
But he can't shut down the big guys.
He's not over 5'10".
Yeah, you can't throw two guys
that
are 5'10".
Dimitri Patterson and Trevard Lindley and Hazelio Hanson as your other corners. I mean, big, tall receivers just go up and get the ball over
these
guys.
I do want to talk about Jimmy Smith's red flags real quick. I was doing some digging on this, and his red flags were 2 underage drinking citations. Now, let's be honest. Is that really that big of a red flag?
A kid was drinking beer in college?
Come on.
I'm shocked.
So, I look at that as, look at it for what it is. People make mistakes, especially kids. That's what we do.
And we've seen Andy Reid has been very akin to picking up players who have made mistakes and are ready to turn it around. None bigger than Michael Vick last year.
Absolutely. He's big on that. Don't be surprised if you hear some Plexico Burris rumors, by the way, because one, Michael Vick has already said he wanted to reach out to him, and two, like we just said, Andy Reid likes those projects.
I mean, he drafted DeSean Jackson out of Cal, knowing that there were issues with the guy. A bit of a diva, a little bit, almost too big for his britches, if you want to say. But DeSean Jackson has become a certified NFL star, and Andy Reid has shown that he can take these guys under his wing and turn them into professional, not only just professional players, but professional men.
And the only one where he missed on in that type of category of these divas and all that is T.O.
Tarlos.
And you know what? No one's corralling that guy.
No one's fixing T.O.'s problems.
That ain't even worth it. But other than that, you know, he's hit on every single one.
So, all right, be sure to check out NFL Draft starting tonight. First round, second round, and all preceding rounds taking place over the weekend. And also be sure to check out Philadelphia Flyers, Boston Bruins, Game 1 this weekend. A rematch of last year's Round 2. Should be a hell of a weekend for sports. All right, well, I want to thank the coach, Dave Bennett, for joining me again this week.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm Dan Schmidt. I'm going to throw it back to John and Callie.
Thank you, Dan, for the latest news on the lockout. Now to throw you for a loop, let's go to Derek to talk about some summer fun.
D-Tech.
The summer times. No, all we're doing today is Callie was feeling a little flustered with all the complaining she's been doing for the past 3 weeks about her relationships.
What am I going to cover this week? I mean, the royal wedding's tomorrow, the elephant's in the room. You guys know from last week's segment that I don't care.
She hates it.
I don't hate it. I'm interested. I think it's cool. But there's too much coverage, and I sit in front of a TV at work.
She hates all the media around it. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a little bit of a break. And since summer is right around the corner, May, the beginning of summer to some people, to me, it's the beginning of summer because I can start wearing shorts again.
He's wearing them today.
I am wearing them today. Showing off my legs. Creepy. We're going to talk about just your favorite summer vacation spots, what you're doing for the summer, just kind of hashing out our plans for the summer. Not the show plans. The show plans will be later. This is personal plans. I'm getting a tan. That's all I know. I'm getting a tan and I'm getting a tattoo.
Yeah, right.
Have you ever been able to tan before?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
What kind of tattoo are you getting?
It's kind of nerdy.
What is it?
What, Harry Potter?
No, it's not. It's not
a
Harry
dragon?
Potter. No.
A dragon in Harry
Potter. I
have
a Potter. Big sword on my leg. So, here, look. See?
So you do have
it's
a
my
tattoo.
Sword.
Oh, your legs are out and you did a nice shave job.
Yeah. fresh from the shower.
Derek doesn't shave his legs, but you know he does have a giant sword on him.
It's not a dinosaur.
Are you
going to
get
sword.
A shield?
No, I'm not going to get a shield. What I want, this is going to be so gosh darn nerdy, it's ridiculous. Okay.
Yeah, make us stop guessing. Put me out of my misery here.
Okay, what I'm going to get on my other leg, wrapping around the entire thing, basically taking up my entire shin.
Snake.
It's not a snake. It's not an animal. Basically, I want like a conjurer, a mage, kind of. All right, follow me.
Watch your language.
I don't even know what you just said.
A magician, like Merlin, somebody who can conjure up things. All right, and what I want him to do is I want him to have both hands out, facing away from each other, and like shooting stuff.
This is like Dungeons and Dragons.
Shooting
stuff
around your leg. Yeah. Well, if his hands are out, it will actually look like he's backwards hugging your leg.
He is backwards hugging my leg.
So
that's exactly what I want.
That was a scene in Harry Potter.
No, it wasn't. Not like that.
I was so close. My first guess.
So, yeah, that's what.
What kinds of powers do you want him to have?
I just want him to have fire. That's it.
I want him to make me happy.
Exactly. No, the whole thing behind it is I always found out, like, magicians and stuff like that, they can always make something out of nothing. They can always conjure things.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that I'm going to be able to conjure something great in my life, and that's what it means. So there is a method behind the madness to the story. It's just this is how I express it.
Interesting.
Deep tech today.
Now, does anyone else have any tattoos?
I don't have any. I have one. Maria has some.
I have two.
Noelle has some.
Ooh, what do you have?
Janine has a prison tattoo. A couple of teardrops under her eye.
She's
for all the homies she lost.
She's done some murdering.
Yeah, for all the homies she lost.
One for the homies right now.
So what kind of tattoos do we have, Maria? What tattoos do you have?
I have an anchor on my right foot, and I have magnolia flowers on my hip.
Symbolism? To show that you're grounded and that you're a free spirit? What? What's the method?
That's good.
That could be two. That could be two good reasons.
What are the reasons?
The anchor thing, I really wanted a tattoo. I was 20 and I drew it myself, and it kind of has symbolism, not kind of a family thing. Same with the flowers, but I drew both of them, so they were both two things I really wanted.
But you've been rowing for a long time too, as well. So maybe the anchor has something to play into that. But what are you doing rowing wise this summer?
Rowing wise, I myself row down at the University Barge Club. And also, I coach Owen J. Roberts. I'm their assistant coach. And they will be having a learn how to row camp this June. Ooh. You want to come out and learn how to row? Well, I think you have to be at the high school, but
Derek can get his tan.
I can get my tan. I can learn how to row.
Yes.
And then I can jump little kids for all their money.
But you can't go in the water because you all have a tattoo.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, no, this is it.
Squash.
I'll take all of the little kids' money while they're in the water to pay for the tattoo.
That
and
works.
Then I can go swimmies. And then I can get the tattoo afterwards.
Nice.
So we're all set. Yeah. Well, Noelle, what do you have?
Noelle's a tattoo, yeah.
I have the Oren from the film The Neverending Story.
What?
I love you.
It's my all-time favorite film. It's very symbolic to me, too, because it is all about imagination and following your dreams.
What do you have?
Mim's got a big look. You don't know what the Oren is?
I don't know what it is either.
What's with everybody's language tonight? Cool. No,
it's
that was the big dog.
It's two snakes biting each other's tails and twisted into a knot.
Wow.
So I have that on my upper back.
It's about that big.
Yep.
And if you watch The Neverending Story, it's the seal on the book.
I've seen it on your back. I like your tattoo.
I see. I got it.
It's incredible.
It's
incredible
amazing.
Incredible film.
And the fact that you have it just makes me love you even more.
Okay,
we're going off on a tattoo tangent.
I didn't get to share mine, though.
Does Janine want to share her prison tattoos?
And I want to hear about Janine's tears.
Janine, which one of your homies bit it?
Bit it.
That is a fabrication, obviously, if you know me. But no, I would never get a tattoo on my face because I'm a classy girl. Not saying that if you do.
I'm a classy girl, too.
You know, you can get your makeup tattooed on.
Yeah. I don't trust anybody near my eyes. But no, I definitely want to get a tattoo, but I've never been able to think of anything. So maybe the barcode, the prison barcode or whatever. I don't even know what prison tattoo
the
is.
Prison barcode?
I don't know. What did you mean by that? Did you mean something?
A prison tattoo?
Yeah, what's that?
You meant a teardrop like you killed somebody.
Something crudely inked into your arm with like a pen.
Oh,
and
no.
A safety
none
needle.
Of that. No.
What tattoo do you have, Callie?
Janine would get a Snickers bar UPC.
Janine will get medium on her back.
Oh, yeah.
There she goes. She likes that one. No, my tattoo is also on my hip, and it's like a squiggle that sort of follows the hip outline, and it says, Amare profondamente, romare quasi mai. And it means love deeply, regret nothing. It's written in Italian.
Is that Arabic?
That's Italian, John, as I just said.
Angela has one that says, she's going to kill me if she hears this, but I forget what it says. Amor e tutto. Love is everything.
Yeah.
And a couple stars right here. My girlfriend has prison tattoos, and I don't. So, she wears the pants in that relationship.
I just wanted one, and it was sort of spontaneous.
We kind of went off on a huge tangent.
So what are we doing for this summer? I'm going down the beach. I'm going to Chincoteague Island to go feed horses and ride my bike on some trails.
Drink, tan, beach. Those are my...
So sophisticated. I'm going to go read a novel.
I'm a lady.
Paint.
Play some cricket.
Yeah. Eat, drink, sleep.
We'll get Dan cutting in here.
I'll be GTLing at the Jersey Shore.
Oh, God. You're officially allowed to leave. I'm firing you. Well, if you have any summer plans, and maybe we'll do this again, you know...
Since we didn't cover it at all.
Yeah. Let's just make it about tattoos. If you have an interesting tattoo or you're going to get a tattoo, you can email me, dtransue@transitionsradio.com. And if you have an interesting thing, we'll post it up on our Transitions Radio Facebook page. We'll post it on our Twitter, anything like that. So if you want to interact with the show, send us your stuff.
Yes, and it'll be on my blog at www.thezish.blogspot.com tomorrow. So you can also comment on that if you want to share your crazy tattoo ideas or
what you actually have.
What you have.
The crazier, the better.
Yeah, we'll share it on the air.
I want to see Homer Simpson tattooed on the side
Send
of your head.
Send pictures if you can.
Oh, yeah, pictures. Pictures
Nothing inappropriate.
Good. Well, they can be inappropriate, but they're just not going up on the website. So... For me and everyone else, we'll wrap up this what was supposed to be summer now turned into what tattoo you have.
GTLing, according to Dan.
GTLing.
That is going to do it for us tonight. Check us out at www.transitionsradio.com. Check us out on Facebook, Transitions Radio, the Twitter.
Twitter.
Transitions are. And where can they listen to us every Friday, John?
Every Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. on 89.1 WYBF FM, The Burn in Radnor, Pennsylvania.
Thanks for listening, and thanks to all of our guests, Maria.
Yeah.
Thanks to Maria. And I'm Callie McCurdy.
And I'm John Mim.
And thanks for listening to Transitions.